Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey everybody, welcome back after a, semi-brief hiatus. This is Broadway Breakdown, and I am your much older co-host, Matt Koplik.
And I'm your much less wiser co-host, John Miscavige. And well, wow, that's really true.
Yeah. And I can't really say that you've gotten any wiser in the last few months, John.
Yeah, if anything, I've gotten way dumber.
Yeah.
Truly.
Well, I mean, your social media game has just improved so much. You're looking so pretty. It's only reasonable that you get dumber.
Thanks. I mean, I'm not sponsored and I don't get a check for this, but I've started wearing Bare Minerals in my show because every time I put makeup on my face, 1,000 demons like to burst forth from my pores. So Bare Minerals helps your face look bare and like a mineral, and still makes my face break out like 1,000 demons, but at least I paid $40 for it to do that. So yeah.
And maybe 9 months down the road they'll hear this podcast and then they'll want to sponsor us. So we're planting seeds.
We truly are,
much like your face. Seeds have been planted.
Yes, so true. That was so easy. Much like my face. Yeah, so we're back from outer space. We just walked in here with that sad look upon our face. We took a little breaky break. Matt and I thought it was best for our relationship if we just took a step back. We reevaluated what was going on. If we thought about what we really wanted out of this. And we came back and we were like, oh, let's do it again.
Yeah. No. We both kind of went, I don't think that I want anything out of this. I don't think I'll get anything out of this, but I've come to rely on this. So
no, and I'm not honestly giving us any sort of, giving them any sort of false ideas that we, took a step back and actually thought about anything. I don't want to lie to all of you. No, I was rehearsing a show. I've been exhausted. My old age is really showing. I truly don't know how people like Elaine Stritch or, Jane Krakowski do it, just those old actresses, how they still keep going in the business, because truly I'm exhausted.
Well it killed Elaine, so there's that, but
that's what they
Jane
want you
still
to think. Yeah. And that's what they want you to think.
That's what they want you to think. Jane's still trucking along somehow. She wants you to think that she's in her late 40s. Bitch is actually 72.
She is. She truly is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's the Samantha Jones of Broadway. She's old, but she's still going to ride it.
Is Samantha Jones Samantha from Sex and the City? I actually never knew she had a last name.
Oh, yeah. They all have last names.
That doesn't seem right.
They're fully formed, well-developed characters, so they must have last names and backstories.
Is it like Charlotte Lady Woman, Carrie Writing Girl? Miranda Lesbian Muff? Like, what is that? Are those their names?
That's
their last names.
Exactly. Well, congratulations, John.
You get
a prize.
It's a gift.
It's a gift. Congratulations. You are so gifted.
That's what they've been telling me for years.
Billy, I'd like to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
How have you been, Mathieu?
I've been good, thank you. Just sort of living my best life and my least best life and all the things in between. I was actually, you're in Florida right now, correct? Doing forum?
I am, yeah. I'm doing a funny thing happening on the way to the forum. I could talk a little bit more about that later, but this is your time right now.
No, John, it's our time. Breathe it in. Breathe worlds to change in. And worlds to win.
Worlds to change
and worlds to win.
Yeah,
for
so
anyone
I'm in Florida.
Who.
And you are I just in to, Florida like, too.
Stop,
right?
I'm talking now. It's my time. It's my time. You said it was my time. Let it be my time.
I'm trying to angle it back to you, but you're just not creating an opening for me.
That's the first time you've ever said that about me.
I know.
That's, oh my God, you're so changed. You're so different.
Talk about Florida, Matt. I'm going to smack you.
Oh my God. Well, I was in Florida recently, although I didn't go to see you. I went to live my childhood dreams. I went to go to Disney World, which I haven't been in 15 years. So that was interesting.
Really? That seems so not right for you.
Yeah. You'd think I would have gone more often than that, but it's expensive. She's expensive.
She is. Did you get someone to sign you in? Or did you pay?
A little bit of both. I got free accommodations, but I did pay for my park passes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and we actually got a pretty good deal on that, but that's not what this is about. When was the last time you were at Disney World, if ever?
Disney World, I was there about 3 or 4 years ago. I went to Epcot. Alexander Sage Oyen's dad... Shout out to him. I'm sure you're listening.
Hey, Daddy.
His dad is a writer for Disney. He writes a lot of like music and stuff for them. And so he was very kind enough to let me into Epcot.
Epcot's great. We got there the last day of their wine and food festival, where you sort of go around the world and you try different foods, drink different beers and wines. And it was a lot of fun. I got carded at every single stand. It was fantastic.
I'm pretty sure they just have to do that for everyone at Disney.
No, you'd be... Because I went with my friend, my other friend, whose name is John. And he's a year and a half younger than me. And he doesn't exist. I made him up completely. But he got carded... he did not get carded everywhere we went. And I did. And he got very mad about this, since I'm a year and a half older than he is.
Wow.
Yeah, well, so... Goes to show.
Your skin.
Moisturize in the morning, moisturize in the evening.
So tight, you could slap a dip off of it. Dick off of it, dip off of it.
That'd be tied to the phone. It's so shaggy. Oh my God. That's where we're going to go to Billy, I'd like to dip with you.
You know what, makes a really good punchline? If you can't get it out of your mouth.
Well, John, most people have said that about you.
Yeah.
You just can't get it out of your mouth.
I love how this podcast has just turned into you painting me to be such a D-fiend. Like, such a D-hungry hole, basically. Just a hole with eyes.
Well, I mean, they say if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And I haven't worked since I graduated college, so.
True.
There we go. So back to the real D fiend, which is me, the D being Disney. I was actually surprised at how much of a theme park Disney World actually is, because in my childhood memories, it was such a magical land. And I went back and like, it's still beautiful, but I went and I was like, oh no, this is like full on theme park. Like it's literally plastic and paper mache. Like Jodie Benson sang the truth when she said that the trees are paper mache.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still fantastic.
I mean,
I'm still obsessed with it.
Oh yeah, no, it's still amazing. But I also feel like as a child, you're not aware of what the state of Florida is. But then as an adult, you grow up and you're like, oh, Florida. And then when you're in Disneyland, you're like, or Disney World, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm still in Florida. You know, and like, listen, if anyone from the Gulf Shore region is listening to this podcast, but you're all over 90, so I'm sure you're not, but in case you are, I'm loving my time in Florida. I am about to move down to Naples because this is like a little slice of heaven in Florida, so I don't mean you when I say, quote, Florida, end quote, as a entity of, need I even finish that sentence?
But well done anyway. You know.
Yeah.
You made your statement.
Yeah, but it really is a theme park. There were hot dogs and a lot of plastic.
And a third of its inhabitants are in scooters. I was baffled. I think I actually told you, if you want to know the state of the American family, just go to Disney World on any given day. And the way that parents put themselves first half the time before their children, I'm just like, yeah, that's why kids are getting more and more fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, I hate theme parks because as an adult, it gives me kind of a weird depression that you look around and you just, I don't see people. I see voters but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
You see, you look at these people and you go, oh my God, you have the right to vote too? Fuck me. Like, yeah, it's a right that we're all, I guess, born with, but some of you don't deserve it. You know?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I was just reading the new David Sedaris book where he talks about that every time he goes to visit his dad in North Carolina, he goes and waits in line at the grocery store and all he can do is look at the other people online and think about who they all voted for because he knows that it was all Trump.
Yeah.
And he just looks at them and he goes, you don't deserve the right.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, they just keep electing Rick Scott. Keeps electing Rick Scott, you just have to, I mean, to quote Margaret Johnson, what happened here? Well, let's see. You know, I played a tricky game in a foreign country.
Which Florida kind of is a foreign country in its own way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a person who keeps your four-year-old up until midnight just so you can get on the Winnie the Pooh ride for the fifth time, do you really deserve to vote for Senate and Congress and governor? Like, do you? Do
and
you really?
Should you really be raising the next generation of humans? Questions to ask.
All good questions to ask. Which leads us to our next topic. No, I didn't have a topic.
I didn't
was
either.
Would...
I, no. I got so... my butthole got so clenched.
Like, oh no, where are we going?
Yeah.
Things I ask every day.
Okay, well, what is our next... What, did you do anything else other than Florida recently? What else have you been up to? What's the tea? Spill the M.O.
The M.O. Well, weirdly enough, I haven't been going to see a lot of theater lately, but I've been seeing a lot of film. I don't go to the movies that often, but the last week and a half, I've gone to see 3 movies, which was odd for me. I took my 95-year-old grandmother to see Star is Born because she requested, and I was like, sure, I'll see it again. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Widows on Tuesday with my other grandmother, and then I saw The Favorite yesterday with my friend Sophia.
How was that? Because that looked like a movie that's either going to be fucking amazing or just a fucking piece of trash.
Well, for me, it was the former. I thought it was absolutely incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah, the trailers definitely highlight the comedic elements of the movie more. And the movie is comedic. Like, there's a lot of funny stuff about it. A lot of it is more kind of just shock value. Like, the way that they speak to each other is written in a way to make you in the audience kind of go, oh, okay. Mm. Like, they're very blunt with each other. Mm. Yeah. But there's definitely a lot of somber elements to it that I wasn't expecting. And the final scene is just so uncomfortable that I'd be just, in my opinion, Oscars all around.
The
three women are just all incredible. Olivia Colman, who played... So for those of you who haven't been keeping up, and if you don't know what The Favorite is, I don't understand how you're in our demographic for this podcast. But
truly, yeah.
Yes, it's a period film about Queen Anne, who was Queen of England in the 18th century for a short time. I want to say like 20 or so years.
Yeah.
And her sort of best friend and confidant, played by Rachel Weisz, Lady Marlborough, and Emma Stone is a distant cousin of Rachel Weisz who is fallen on hard times and comes to the palace in search of a job. And then in sort of like a sexy, all about Eve formula, slowly starts to usurp Rachel Weisz's place for Queen Anne's affections. You know, the whole point is that Emma Stone comes in and she's supposed to be all innocent and good, and then you realize that she actually is way more conniving than you give her credit for. And
basically my role on this podcast.
Pretty much, yeah. And you would think that I was the Rachel Weisz, but I'm really the Olivia Colman. I just kind of wander around crying and complaining about my legs and eating cake and then throwing up. That's yes. just sort of, yes, that's just who I am at my core. So the movie is very fascinating because it's just, it's the angle they're going with for it is that it's not like your regular period film. They curse and they talk about sex and it's all very harsh and funny. And it is all of that, but there is an element of darkness to it that I wasn't expecting. And Emma Stone and Olivia Colman have a final scene together that is just devastating. In the way that it's shot and the way that they act. I mean, you know that I am a fan of Emma Stone, so I went in slightly biased, but she heavily impressed me in this movie. Just the way that she was able to sort of play that double agent, and then just her work with Olivia Colman was incredible. So I highly recommend.
Well, I cannot wait to see it. That's been on my list, and I've actually oddly been seeing a lot of movies as well, but it's kind of been like the like main ticket ones. Like I just saw Ralph Breaks the Internet, which I actually just saw the first one of that a couple days before. My cast members were very excited for it, so I had to get back into the Ralph world. Then we saw Bohemian Rhapsody, and then this is my first time seeing a Harry Potter film since reading the series. So I saw Fantastic Beasts the weekend that it came
all
out.
All on the inside of the Sunset
Kind of like
Oaks.
Boy Erased is the big one next on our docket. Same. So I really, really want to see that one. But I will add the favorite to my list.
Please do. Can you ask? Actually, I'm curious on your take because I haven't seen it yet. Bohemian Rhapsody. What were your thoughts on that? Because I've heard things.
I enjoyed it a lot. Everyone in my cast that saw it with me. Or like flicking the bean to it afterwards, and I really, really liked it. I don't know what it is with me and movies anymore, but I'm having a lot of trouble getting emotionally invested into them, and that's okay. Let me explain this. So I will cry at the drop of a dime. Like, literally anything makes me cry. So, of course, I cried for, like, 20 minutes straight in the movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm having a hard time. I don't know if it's because my body is craving plays or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding the scenes in movies recently to be way too short and way not... like, just not developed enough. Like, a lot of the scenes in movies that I've been seeing recently feel like vignettes or snippets or, like... They all seem kind of fragmented. And, yeah, this one jumped around in time, so it was going to be fragmented. But, I don't know, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I would recommend it. But I also see how people would have... how it would be a polarizing film. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the coolest thing that it does was the Live Aid concert. They literally recreated, like, all 20 minutes of it. And that was really cool in the ending. So... And that I feel like that's not giving anything away, because I feel like that's actually what's gotten the most praise anyways. Mm-hmm. But it's really, really cool. Yeah, I cried a lot. I think Rami Malek did a really great job. Yeah, it was they try to make you so Freddie Mercury passed away and he had like a partner that he had for his last couple years of his life. Mm-hmm. And the screen time they gave to that partner was probably about like 3-4 minutes total, and it was fragmented throughout. Mm-hmm. Including like their meeting, their first date, like I mean, like all of those things totaled about like 3-4 minutes, and then you're just supposed to like feel like, yes, I feel complete in the fact that he has the I don't know, it was not my favorite film that I've ever seen, but I also
I definitely understand that. It's actually, you're kind of on the money in terms of a lot of movies now. The screenwriting is in a way that the scenes are more sort of like postcards of a story or of a life that overall culminate into a very telling story. But because they want you to have all these little details to build a bigger picture, but you don't get a nice chunk of time to just sort of sit with two characters and hear it.
You don't. And so for me, I kind of keep getting emotional whiplash in movies mm-hmm. where I don't really feel things for most of the movie, and then something really dramatic, and so I'm not emotionally invested, but then something really dramatic happens, and because of emotional manipulation, I end up crying, and I'm not necessarily always moved, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel emotionally manipulated more sure. times than not. Yeah, so that's movies on this Broadway...
on this Broadway podcast. I suppose we should talk about theater. I mean, I just haven't seen... anything in a while.
I could plug my show a little bit if you're down in Naples, any listeners, because I think I've talked a little bit about what I'm doing, but now that we're open and that the production is actually running, it's been really interesting. This production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum that I'm doing is not completely gender bent. We keep calling it gender jumbled.
Okay.
But it's just been super. Have I talked about it in this podcast?
No, I remember you told. You're using headphones a little bit. No, I think we did mention that you were going down there to do it. I don't think we haven't had an episode since you got down there though.
Yeah, I know that. I just wasn't sure how much I had gone into this. So basically, if you are not familiar with A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, it is a very funny show that was written in the 1960s by Stephen Sondheim and some of the writers of MASH and old comedic writers. And
Larry Gelbart is...
Yeah, Larry Gelbart.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they wrote it for these bunch of old vaudeville men and Zero Mostel and just kind of all the men keep the show afloat, and then basically all of the women are either domineering wives who you're supposed to hate or laugh at for being a woman, courtesans, which are more or less, you know, women that you buy to have sex with and to be your slaves.
Yeah.
Or...
it's a pretty name for a sex slave. Courtesan is a pretty name for a sex slave.
Yeah, and that's it. So those are the two archetypes of women, and it includes a lovely song called Everybody Ought to Have a Maid, where it's not reprised once. It has two encores immediately after you sing the first song, and it's all about... starts with two men, ends with four men, just talking about how great it is to have a woman to basically be your slave, to do shit for you, to be an object for you to have sex, to be an object for you to ogle.
Yeah.
And so our lovely creative team and this amazing theater down here in the middle of Florida, Gulf Shore Playhouse, wanted to take this extremely sexist show, which I saw for the first time at the Pittsburgh Public Theater when I was up there earlier in the year doing Up and Away and at PCLO. And I saw the show, and it was a great production, but it was really interesting because every single review that it got was like, the actors are great, it's really funny, but I couldn't help but cringe throughout basically the whole show, and I know why it's not done as much anymore, because it's just so incredibly sexist.
Yeah.
And there was a production a couple of years ago that Roundabout was developing with Jess Stone, with her husband Chris Fitzgerald, where it was played by all men, which kind of switched a lot of the sexism into, like, you were enacting sexism to men. But it was, once again, it's all men. And so you're kind of like, well, where's the female voices? So this, our director, Darren Katz, who was James Lapine's assistant for a while, he basically originally was going to do another all-male production of it, and then was kind of like, hey, that rubs me the wrong way. And so he decided to come up with this idea of gender jumbling it. And he had some ideas that he knew that he wanted, you know, the roles to be played by different genders. But what we kind of came up with is that it's a cast of 10. Normally it's about a cast of, you know, 15 to 20 people. Mm-hmm. But it is the kind of like the main three sexist roles of the show are now played by women, even though they're still keeping their gender as men, mm-hmm. but they're played by women. And then some of the one woman role is played by a man, the kind of the domineering wife. And then one of the main courtesans, Philia, who is supposed to be bought by this macho soldier, Miles Gloriosus,
the actress doubles and plays both of those characters. So we've created this like really awesome world where my character is true to his gender in the sense of he's a man, but eventually my character gets put in a dress because he has to be used as like a distraction. But I end up singing, I'm in the song Everybody Ought to Have a Maid, but it's really cool because every night I'm singing it on stage with these three strong, powerful women who they are all objectifying me in the song. And so it's really like, it's a really cool production and it's been opening a lot of eyes and discussions to these people. We've had some people walk out. Yesterday we had a lovely old couple walk out in the middle of Everybody Ought to Have a Maid. But we also like, instead of having a lot of the courtesans be actual women, we have these stick figures with like big boobs and bobbly heads and a stick thin body to represent like what men wish women were, just and so it's been a lot of fun. It's been really interesting. I've been learning a lot. I based my character, even though he is a male, I based him off of the 1960s 70s comedian Paul Lynde. So even though he is male, he is super swishy. He is gay as a day in May, and I had this whole long thesis about how, because in the time when this was written, it was okay to be gay because we could laugh at you being gay, but it wasn't actually okay to be gay. So it's been super empowering and really wonderful. Ooh. And we actually have our first public talk back tonight, and I'm super excited about it to hear firsthand from these people, because a lot of the audience in regional theaters and in theaters in New York are women over their 50s.
That's
and
wonderful
so
to hear.
It's really interesting. I'm very excited. I'm very proud to be part of the show.
John, you are very brave. You are at the front tackling sexism, and I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, it's just me. It's just me.
it's just you alone. I do love that you're basing your characterization off of Paul Lynde, because it's just one step closer to you becoming Roger from American Dad.
Well, that's the other thing. So yeah, it's definitely based off of Paul Lynde, and some of it is a little bit of Roger, which is based off of Paul Lynde.
Those of you who are wondering who Paul Lynde is, Paul Lynde was the original dad in Bye Bye Birdie, the one who sings Kids, and then he was on Hollywood Squares for a long time. Mm-hmm. He was a very interesting case of a celebrity who was gay, like so goddamn gay. And it wasn't like it was everybody was okay with him being gay, but he had a career, like a good one, a really good one. And he never played gay characters; like he always played straight characters. But he was still so gay. And for the time period that he was successful in, it's a weird kind of victory that it happened, and it was almost like a fluke. I can't really explain it, but
yeah, it was a weird victory. And at the same time, it was such an interesting aspect of like, we are so much more comfortable in societies of the quote unquote like second class citizens, or the people who, if you're not a white cisgendered heteronormative man, how if you're a black person, we feel easier. It's easier to marginalize someone who's younger than them, or not younger, lesser quote unquote than those type of people, as a society, rather than fully accepting them, because it's kind of, you think that you are accepting them, but you're not. You're actually making them fit into your box, and it's another way of controlling them. And so it's super interesting, because I mean, I watched a ton of episodes of Paul Lynde on Hollywood Squares, and I mean, one of my favorite things is that one of my favorite jokes that he did was what did the captain? It was something in the lines of, "What did the captain say when the one female passenger fell off the board of the ship?" And then Paul Lynde, without missing a beat, just goes, "Full steam ahead, boys!" You know, it's so interesting, because then people would roar and laugh, but like if in that moment he like became serious and said something as if, you know, if he ever admitted I'm gay, people would have turned on him. It's so interesting.
Should a wife ever tell her husband that he is a failure as a lover?
Well, she should break it to him easy. Like, you're almost as good as...
Let's move to Broadway for a second, shall we?
What's that?
I've heard it's a faraway land where the belters and mixers roam. Mm. It's actually been a sort of mixed bag of a week for Broadway. Yes, I don't know how much of Playbill John has read this week, so I'll just recap for everybody out there. We've had 3 Broadway closing announcements this week, as well as three of them. We have Head Over Heels, Once on This Island, and what was the third one?
Donna Summer.
Donna Summer, yeah, the Donna Summer musical. One taught me love, one taught me patience, one taught me pain.
I don't know if those are exactly the lyrics in Thank You Next, but I appreciate the effort.
I'm pretty sure they are. Isn't I'm pretty sure those are the exact lyrics.
One taught me,
I think it's patience.
Is it patience?
And then the third one's pain, right?
The third one's definitely pain.
We could argue about Ariana Grande lyrics to the day we die. No one's ever going to truly know what those words are.
True. I'm very sad about these closings. Some more than others. Two more than others. But
I would. Yeah. I haven't
seen Donna Summer, but
no. I'm sad about Once on This Island closing. I can't say I'm surprised. Anyone who's watched, I mean, I'm a weirdo who reads the grosses every Monday because it's fun for me to sort of see what shows are doing well, what are not, what's mm-hmm. on the uphill trend and stuff like that. It also kind of keeps you from being devastated when things close because you can sort of see the warning signs. Like, I've been seeing the warning signs for Once on This Island for a few months now.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that they've had an over year-long run and they won Best yeah. Musical Revival. Like, for artistic purposes, this revival was a success. It was seen. It was in the conversation. I don't think it's going to have made back its money, its investment by the time that it closes. But, you know, I think that those producers are still very happy with the outcome. Head Over Heels is a bit of a mixed bag for me because it did run for a very long time. But I don't know. Did you ever like see the grosses for Head Over Heels, John?
I didn't, but even when I saw the show in previews, it was not a fully sold out house.
No. And that cast is just so talented and fantastic. And it's sort of, I have two frames of mind that just constantly weave in and out of each other, like figure skaters. I'm happy that they are working and they are performing, but I want them to be performing at full houses. I don't like the idea of Bonnie Milligan belting out High E's for 12 people on a Wednesday. I want her to do it, you know, to a full Carnegie Hall.
Same.
So it's a mixed bag. And I'm hoping that come January when the show does close, that everyone in that cast can find a great new job and Bonnie Milligan can go on to the next great big thing, even bigger thing. Yes. I feel the same way about Ariana DeBose with Summer. Like, I never wish anybody in the arts unemployment. I just wish that they find employment that is fulfilling. And sometimes that's not the show that you're in. Sometimes it's the next show or the one after that.
Totally. So, yeah. No, so, I mean, I always hold true to the fact that I loved Head Over Heels. I loved it so much, but I think in the history of the world, Head Over Heels exists to catapult Bonnie Milligan into the stardom that she truly deserves.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to be known for 10 years from now, is that it launched Bonnie Milligan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, I've always felt this way about Michael Mayer. He tends to kind of always launch a career or two with all of his shows. Each show, there's always somebody who kind of breaks out. You know, we had Sutton Foster's the famous one from Millie, but we also have Lena Hall with Hedwig, Jesse mm-hmm. Mueller on A Clear Day, Kristen mm-hmm. Chenoweth in Charlie Brown, and this one I think is Bonnie Milligan. I think she's the one that will break out from this show, which is, I think, you know, so good too. For her. Yeah. So, you know, that's good news. And it's always sad when shows close, but if we don't have shows closing, we don't have new ones coming in, you know?
Like Hadestown.
Yes! Do you know anything about it?
I know very, very little, although we were driving around with our music director the other day, and he's a big Hadestown fan, and so he mm-hmm. played some of the music for it, and I literally 3 seconds in was like, I'm ready to bottom for this. Like, literally, like...
Well, John, that doesn't mean much coming from you.
I know, but like still, like literally, like I was ready. Like my body is ready for Hadestown. The music is amazing. I mean, if you So many people in that cast. I mean, Patrick Page, Amber Gray, Ava Noblezada. I always feel I'm mispronouncing her name.
I think it's Ava Noblezada, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just people that I am in awe of on one stage telling, like, a retelling of any kind of mythological, like, I'm just there for it. I'm ready to get my ticket, you know? I'm here.
And a Rachel Chavkin production, like, yes, please. Yes. Yas God.
How dare I even not even mention that? Like, yes, Rachel Chavkin, like, let us give her the Tony that she so rightly deserved from Natasha great Pierre comment. And the Great Comet of 1812.
Yeah, you know? It's coming. It's happening. Yeah. And I'm very pumped for her. It's, yeah. Yeah. And this season has been very bland for me so far, which is why I've been seeing so many movies.
Do you know what's crazy though? I read something the other day that said that Hadestown announcing that it's coming to Broadway makes it the 11th new musical opening on Broadway this year. That feels like a lot, doesn't it?
So it's King Kong, Held Over Heels, Getting the Men Back Together, Pretty Woman. That's four. The Prom is five. Be More Chill, Beetlejuice, Tootsie, Hadestown, Ain't Too Proud, that's 10. What's the 11th? John, what's the 11th?
I mean, the fact that you just listed all of those without barely skipping a beat.
Are you surprised? This is me.
No, I'm not. This is me. No, I'm not surprised. It's just... you got so much brains, kid. You got so much brains, and I got so much dumbs. You know,
you got so much booty. That's what you got. I'm like Rain Man. You know,
you truly are.
You throw the toothpicks on the ground, and I can tell you how many Tony nominations it got.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
I cannot wait to see The Prom. Very own Caitlin Kinnunen from previous episodes.
I actually thought about this. I thought I was going to wait till you got back to see it. But then I was like, no, because if I go with John, I'm just going to get overshadowed by his presence. So I'm going to go on my own. And then I'm going to have my own personal alone time with Caitlin. So fuck you.
Did I ever tell you the story of how I almost killed Caitlin during Bridges of Madison County? Did I tell this on the podcast?
Was it your opening night present to her?
It wasn't an opening present. It was just the night that I saw, and when I gave her donuts, and then she went into, like, almost a diabetic shock and couldn't do the second act.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Yeah, I was so excited to see Bridges because I was out of town for a while, and I came in, and donuts are a big thing for us. We love our donuts.
Yes.
And so I got her a dozen Krispy Kreme. I went to Penn Station, like the trash that I am, and got her a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts and dropped them off at before half hour for her. And I was seeing the show by myself, you know, just a lonely gay boy seeing Bridges.
Sure. We've all been there.
And, you know, the first act is going on. She's amazing. Everyone's doing amazing. I think I saw Kelly O'Hara's boobs. I don't know if that was the first act or second act. But I definitely saw her boobs.
Oh, she gets out of the tube?
She gets out of the tub.
Yeah, that's first act.
And then blah, 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 intermission, sitting there just twiddling my thumbs, waiting for more beautiful singing. And they make an announcement of, ladies and gentlemen, for the second act, the role of, was her name Caitlin in the show as well? I don't remember what the daughter's name is.
I don't know. But, no one remembers. Francesca, like, that's the mom. That's all we know.
I think it starts with the C. The role of so-and-so will be played by, I think it was Effie Artema, was her understudy, who did an amazing job. But I was like, oh my god, what happened? And so I text Caitlin, but of course she wasn't answering her phone. And so I opened my phone afterwards, and I have this text from her. She still claims that it wasn't from eating the donuts, that she kind of, like, her blood sugar spiked and whatnot. But, yeah, she had a health issue and couldn't finish the act, and I almost killed The Prom's Caitlin, now history-making Caitlin Kinnunen.
Yes.
The first LGBTQ kiss on the Macy's Day Parade, Caitlin Kinnunen.
Way to go, Caitlin.
Yeah, I almost killed that.
You almost killed that, and we're grateful that you didn't. but you know, we might have to lock you up for a little bit just to keep you from almost
lock
killing anybody
else. Lock her. Oh wait, that's me.
That's. Oh Jesus Christ, superstar! I'm actually very excited to see it.
I am as well.
Yeah, I waited a while, but I think I'm gonna try and go sometime in December. When do you get back from Floridia at the end of the month?
December 31st. So
great. So I'll see December 29th then.
Starting 2019 with unemployment and a large bout of seasonal affective disorder, because I will not be acclimated to that weather. It is in the mid 60s right now, and I'm wearing a large woolen sweater, huge socks, and I'm shivering.
Well then,
I'm fucked.
Well, listeners, you can expect many, many episodes of Broadway Breakdown in 2019, because that's going to be the only thing keeping John away from the window ledge.
Truly, I mean, they're going to be awful episodes, because it's going to be me on a pile on the table and you just prodding me, going, just say something.
I'm going to narrate to everybody your movements and your facial expressions. Today, John is semi-comatose, but I started playing some Kelly O'Hara, and he turned to the left a little bit and then just went to sleep.
You know, speaking of Kelly O'Hara again, it brings me back to this little piece called The Light in the Piazza. And I was talking to myself.
Because no one else will listen.
Because no one else will listen. And I started writing this think piece in a fury one night. And I haven't finished it yet. But I have this theory. I have this theory that Francesca from Bridges of Madison County and Margaret Johnson from Light in the Piazza are the same women in an alternate timeline.
Explain that, please.
Silence. I can't fully explain it until I finish the think piece, which I'm sure will just people eat up.
Right
to the New York Times.
So well.
There are a lot of parallels between the characters that you could draw between the different stories, and yeah, if so, you know how musical theater. I also am enjoying that I'm catching myself saying like on this episode a good amount. And now I've just started beginning to say the word like. And so I'll go, you know, lie. And then I'll stop myself. So I keep saying the word lie.
Well, that's me and the word and the sound effect. I realize I'd say a lot. It's really unfortunate. But
we're the worst.
Yeah, we should be
so
smarter.
You know how in musical theater exists, in my mind at least, on a parallel timeline from ours. You know, there's a world where these musicals exist. Do you think the same way? Just say yes.
Yes, for the sake of your theory, sure.
So in my mind, Francesca and Margaret Johnson are the same women on a alternate timeline from that alternate timeline that musicals already exist.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your reasonings are what?
I have
just
the
because
proof
just because you wanted to say that?
No, I have the proof in the pudding. I just haven't fully the pudding hasn't set yet.
Okay.
So, I have my theories. I have to just
That's not a good argument, John, because your brain, man. Oof. Oof.
Yeah, no, my brain's the worst.
It is the worst.
But that's fine. You're really going to be moved once I write this.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Think piece.
That's what I call all of your Facebook statuses. They're all just think pieces for me.
Yeah, I've been taking a couple days off, the last like two or three days off, because my brain's just been tired. But I haven't laughed
in days. It's terrible.
I know. I'm so sorry. I did just see that Dear Evan Hansen is about to become a feature film, so kind of this episode now ties all in together, tend to feature
Wait,
films
is it?
And Broadway. Yeah, according to Broadway.com.
They're fast-tracking that thing?
Yeah, it's set to become a feature film, also according to Deadline.
Good for them. Speaking of
Universal
movie musical
Pictures.
Feature films.
Yeah.
Speaking of movie musical feature films, we now have more casting for the batshit crazy event that is the Cats movie.
Jason Derulo.
Yep, it's Rum Tum Tugger, bitches.
I'm not convinced it isn't a joke.
I just
Is it Rebel Wilson also doing it?
Yes! She's Jenny Anydots.
Who is
that?
Oh my god. I don't know the show.
So Jenny Anydots is the cat who taps, and Rum Tum Tugger is the cat who fucks, and Grizabella is the cat who belts.
Who's Grizabella?
And Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, okay, that makes sense, I guess.
And they still haven't confirmed it, but the rumor is that Taylor Swift is singing McCavity. McCavity, McCavity.
I'm done. So, I quit.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
I'm still not entirely convinced that, A, this movie is happening, and, B, if it does happen, like, you're just going to get to the theater with your popcorn and, you know, your rum-spiked Coke, and because how else are you going to see this movie? And the screen's going to project, and it's just going to be Charlie bit my finger for 90 minutes. Like, I'm convinced that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Fight me for it. I don't know.
I don't know. It truly feels... Our alternate timeline that we're on has truly gone awry.
Yeah. This is the darkest timeline.
Yeah.
Something broke.
So that's what I have to offer.
It's not a hell of a lot, but it's quality.
Is it?
I was trying to be kind, but sure, if you want to test me.
Honestly, I think on that note, I my body wants to give up now, so I'm done.
Yeah. Well, folks, I will do my part and try to see a little bit of theater before our next episode, so I at least can bring back some of the intelligence to this podcast.
And I will do my part and not think at all.
Yes, that is what you're here for. That is what we want, John. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're
much appreciated.
Thank you.
Anywho, I think, yeah, as like you said, this is a good time to peace out. So we got to do our part and think of a little Broadway diva. I told John, I realized that I hadn't been keeping track of all of the divas we've had so far. So I took a couple of minutes to listen to the end of all of our episodes and made a little list. Quite eclectic, I must say. But there are still some big ones we haven't done yet. John, any thoughts? Any requests? Keep in mind, I might shut it down.
What about... Who... Have we... have we had Victoria Clark?
We haven't! We haven't had Victoria Clark. I wasn't expecting you to say her.
Well... You know me. Expect the unexpected.
So next episode, I will look forward to your super intelligent insight.
Good luck with that.
Burn. Yeah, let's go with Victoria Clark, babe. I love me some Vicky. Some Vicky C.
I do too.
I crave it. All right. So this has been Broadway Breakdown. I'm Matt Koplik.
And I'm John Stephen Wiscavige.
And this is Victoria Clark. Mixing, belting, sopranoing away.
Brilliant.
Goodbye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.